Blog Talk Radio.
British lady drives us crazy. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dan Binkley from Witness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're here by ourselves. But
not really. We got Fogs Bane and good old Bob in the chat.
Right. What I meant is we don't have our brother Gar co-hosting,
yes.
But the good news is looks like he'll be doing a brand new show tonight. So
yeah, Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul right after our show at 8 Eastern. If you're listening live.
And, oh, that was... Yeah, that's when we're done. That's just not when we're through.
Yeah, we were through a long time ago, brother.
Or, we were.
Or at least I have been. But I digress. We got some... Oh, good story. Dave tells me this one is really, really good. A CBS Radio Mystery Theater classic.
And even Gar, when I talked to him Friday morning about it, so what do you think? He said, oh, that show is so eerie. And it's great because this is Eerie House Radio.
And it's called The Shining Man.
No. The Shining Man, not The Shining Man. The Shining Man. There's no comma there. Take that comma. Get that comma out of there. Get that comma out of there.
That's The Shining Man. Oh, our studio is being absolutely non-responsive.
If you remember the 70s, you weren't there. Yes, sir.
That's right. No, it's The Shining Man.
Here's Johnny.
There you go. That's what it is.
That's a different Shining Man, but that isn't indeed a Shining Man. That is indeed a Shining Man, though.
Yes, he is.
Yes, yeah.
That's right, good old
Bob.
Facebook would never lie to you. They might spy on you, but they'll never, ever lie to you.
Oh, the biggest joke you've told all year. Anyway.
Sometimes a joke is just an overstatement of truth, but I digress. Sometimes not so much.
Sometimes not, yes.
And depending on the topic, sometimes the laugh is on you. Or me.
Well, it depends on how hard you spill it is whether it's all over you or not.
True. But this I tell you, good radio tonight, yes.
We are having good radio tonight. Yeah, this is one of those ones that I guess I tell you to turn the lights off, but it's still light outside, so it doesn't help a whole lot. But
yeah, it doesn't really matter.
Close your eyes. But this would be a really good, and actually that is a great way to watch radios with your eyes closed. Because
go into your closet, close the door, and take the radio with you.
No, Dale, it's easy to go in the closet. It's hard to come out. That's just the way it is. Just the way it is.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. Good radio tonight. Oh, yes, indeed. And, you know, Dave and I were mentioning, and I know a couple of you listening in the chat as well as in the archives have told us that you really like commercials when we have them that are part of the original recordings, because there are some folks who try to do what we do, and they'll edit the commercials out at times. And I even see on some of the Facebook groups, some of the old-time radio fans, they love the commercials too. We love them, and we'll try to keep them in there as often as we can.
Yeah, we don't generally chop the commercials out. Sometimes the recordings we get don't have the commercials in it, or like last night when it went to the Armed Forces, all the commercials were chopped out because it was going strictly out to the Armed Forces. And sometimes people cut them out before, as the ones that are available to us. But especially, you know, we get a big kick out of the ones that are in Mystery Theater and Zero Hour and things like that, because these are commercials of the of Dale's of my formative years in the early to late 70s, you know.
Yes.
And that's we get an especially big kick out of those. And most of our listeners should be able to remember a little bit of them. But especially we were talking about how, you know, so many jingles. Everything had to have a jingle. Now you don't even have a TV theme song. You had TV theme songs that hit the top 40 on the charts and stuff. But no, you don't even get any TV theme songs anymore. And nobody really does the jingles, you know.
No, so not too much on commercials anymore. And I kind of miss them. Good old Bob says he's wearing earbuds. So I guess Eerie House is getting inside your head, man. Whoa.
That way we'll follow you everywhere. Everywhere.
Yeah, that's right. It's like an earworm. Much like the earworm that got Chekhov. But I digress. Good radio tonight. CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And we're going to maybe even cram in some extra treats for you tonight.
Oh, yeah. We have at least one special segment. But we'll see how that goes. We do have pretty close to a full hour of Mystery Theater. So maybe we should get rolling with it, Dale.
I think we should give you folks as much as we can tonight. Here's part one of The Shining Man.
By the way, one of the special guests tonight, Morgan Fairchild, is in this.
It's 54 degrees in Manhattan. But
it's all 85 over here in Cleveland.
And this is from March 15th. 1977.
Itchy trigger finger, I guess.
It's 54 degrees in Manhattan, and it's partly cloudy. I'm Lester Smith. Next news at 8 o'clock. Major events when they occur. Next, the Mystery Theater over WOR Radio 710, The Talk of New York. WOR News Time, 7:05.
Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. This tale isn't for the easily scared or the faint of heart. It's a full-blooded ghost story and introduces once again that intrepid voyager into the unknown seas of the supernatural and the occult, who always manages to return with a pragmatic explanation of what seems to be the inexplicable. Our mystery drama, The Shining Man, was based on the short story by E. and H. Herron, and written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin, and stars Bob Caliban and Morgan Fairchild. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and General Electric Citizen Band Radios.
Hey, ma'am, what's for dinner? Hey, ma'am, what you got?
What's for dinner? ShopRite has the answer. Choice grade boneless top round steak, $1.59 a pound. Served with fresh snow white mushrooms, 12-ounce package, 89 cents. Save two on Swift Franks, regular or beef, 1-pound package, 69 cents. Tropicana frozen orange juice, 6-ounce cans, 4 for 99 cents. ShopRite fruit drinks, 46-ounce cans, 3 for a dollar. And what's for your car? Quaker State Super Motor Oil, 1-quart can, just 59 cents. There's a lot more for a little less at ShopRite, so why pay more?
She loves the family. She wants the best. She does all that she can do. She lets ShopRite do the rest. Hey, ma, what's for dinner? ShopRite has the answer.
It's coffee time, so make it special. Add Cremora to your coffee. Cremora gives your coffee the board and cash.
Cremora non-dairy creamer now offers you exciting new hot beverage recipes under the label. One of them is Café Au Monde, a tasty combination of sensational almond-flavored coffee and creamy smooth Cremora. And Café Au Monde is only one of 8 delicious recipes you'll find under the specially marked Cremora label at many grocery stores right now. Try our recipes, then create your own.
Cremora gives your coffee the board and cash.
Honey, let's have Cremora Café Au Monde.
Café Au Monde today, cook a sweet tomorrow.
Cremora gives your coffee the board.
Try Cremora 8 new exciting ways. Look for a specially marked Cremora recipe label today.
Cremora gives your coffee the board and cash.
I don't know about you, but to me, it seems a pity that haunted houses have gone out of style. Perhaps it has to do with the uncompromising utilitarianism of modern houses. After all, what self-respecting ghost would feel at home without a turret room, a sliding panel or two, and a host of shadowed, twisted corners? So to enjoy our story, let's retrace our steps back to the turn of the century, when walls were wainscoted, ceilings were high and ornate, and the clanking of chains and groans from the grave were enhanced instead of smothered by insulation and acoustic tile.
Oh, I hope he's on this train, Uncle Flax. He was due last night, and he wasn't on the morning train.
Well, whatever held him up, it must have been a very important something indeed to keep my nephew Donald away from your side for so long.
Oh, it doesn't matter anymore. There he is. Don?
Oh, darling, Gigi. It's been 1,000 years.
A million without you. Was the trip worth leaving me abandoned here in London?
Oh, just wait till you hear. Hello, Uncle.
Hello, Don. Did you take the position?
I did. You are now looking at the brand new headmaster of the Girvan Academy for Boys. Not only that, but I found us a house.
Oh, I knew the trip would be worthwhile. I just knew it.
Congratulations, my boy.
Oh, I must talk to you about the house, too, Uncle Flax.
Oh, there's time enough for that at home tonight. Now, it's a matter of finances.
No, nothing to do with that. I'll explain later.
Well, whatever it is, you know you can count on me.
My name is Don Campbell. I'm of Scottish and English descent, but I was educated in Canada and America, where I met and married my wife. Gigi was an orphan, like me. And in 1900, being at that time unemployed, we were overjoyed to accept an invitation from my only relative, Mr. Flaxman Lowe, to visit him in London. While there, I suspect through my uncle's pulling a few strings, I had been offered an interview for a job as headmaster of Girvan Academy in Scotland.
The job sounds marvelous, Don. But I know you. Why do you keep avoiding talking about the house?
But that's marvelous, too.
Well, do we need a house? Surely it couldn't have been too difficult to rent something furnished.
But the house is furnished, too. And Gigi, I mean, it was too good a thing to pass up. The bargain of all time.
Well, what sort of bargain? What sort of house?
Well, it's kind of hard to describe. I mean, it's really stunning. High on a ridge. And the view is stupendous. Connor Old House, it's called. When you look at it from outside, you'll fall in love with it just as I did.
And the inside?
Oh, well, it's been empty for quite a few years. And, well, there's work to be done there. And I've already arranged with the agent to hire a man to clean it up. And the price includes the furniture.
Don, are you trying to tell me you've bought this house without my ever even seeing it?
Well, not exactly bought. Just a down payment. Oh, but, darling, I tell you, it was such an incredible bargain.
Why is this house such an incredible bargain?
Well, I suppose because it's supposed to be haunted.
Oh, that's great.
Well, Gigi, I couldn't pass up an absolute steal like this. I can't describe to you how lovely Connor Old House is. Clothed in ivy, on the highest hill within its horizon, with the green grass tumbling down to the cliffs and the dunes and the endless sea beyond.
And the ghosts you spoke of?
Oh, local superstition. And if they bother us by groaning and clanking about, well, there's always Uncle Flax. As a parapsychologist, they're his life work, and he can blow them away just like the mists.
Are you so sure?
Brandy, Uncle Flax?
Yes, thank you. You're not joining me?
No, thanks. I only got you away from Gigi so I'd have a chance to talk to you about the house.
All right. What's troubling you?
The house is supposed to be haunted.
By whom?
What they call the Shining Man.
The Shining Man?
Uh-huh.
Hmm. What does that mean?
Oh, a lot of talk, gibberish, but I honestly don't know. I think a trick of the moon on the windows reflecting, something like that.
Oh, I see. Who was the former owner?
Sir James Mackay, who had retired from abroad, Central Africa, I think. He lived there with his daughter and a gigantic black who apparently was devoted to him for saving his life in Africa.
Why did they leave?
Well, they didn't. The daughter, it seemed, had contracted some virulent disease from her African sojourn, and she died while her father was on some business in London.
Hmm. And the father?
The shock of finding his daughter dead on his return was too great for him, and he settled into a sort of melancholy and eventually died.
It's not a very pretty history. What happened to the slave?
Slave?
Yes, the black man.
Well, I didn't say he was a slave.
Oh, yes, that's right, you didn't. What happened to him, anyway?
Oh, I don't know. Well, let me see. In the local gossip, there was something about Sir James accusing him of being responsible for the girl's death. But, well, it never came to anything because the black had disappeared. And not long after, Sir James was found on the living room couch, dead of apoplexy. His face covered with horrible, livid patches.
And this is the home to which you expect to take that pretty young American wife of yours?
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Uncle Flaxman. The tragedies of others have nothing to do with us. A house is not a person. It can't affect us. And even if there are any malign influence hovering around, well, I have the best protection in the world, don't I?
Oh, yes? What is that?
You. Aren't you the foremost ghost detective in the world? If we run into trouble, can't I coax you to tilt a couple of tables or at least exorcise any demons if they're wandering about?
My dear boy, you know I am always at your service, but I wouldn't joke about the unknown, Don. Why this house instead of any other?
Because it's the only one I can afford. And I've already made a down payment. So, there we were. Gigi and I, with all our worldly belongings, off for Scotland as soon as we could pack. Of course, I should have stopped to write first and waited for a reply, but that isn't my way. I had made a decision. Why waste time? Especially since London was expensive and almost all my money had gone for the payment on the house, and it would be a month before I could expect my salary at the academy to begin. We had to take the train north to Ayr, and then debark and retrace our steps south some 30 miles to Girvan, the nearest town to what I now thought of our home. It was a good 25 miles by road, and it was after dark on a blustery, drizzly evening when we arrived at Lanark Inn, where I had stayed before. Happily, the landlord remembered me and had accommodations.
Hey, hello there, Mr. Campbell. It's good to see you again. Will you be staying?
Oh, just for a night or so, Mr. McTavish, with my wife.
We'll bid you good welcome, too, Mrs. Campbell. Oh, but you're a bonny lass, and I can't blame Mr. Campbell for making you his own. But you look a wee bit chill. Now, come on, Ben, and you'll warm yourself by the fire, the two of you.
Mr. McTavish was as good as his word. Not only did he have a fire, but he had some warming beer, and with it, some heavenly steak and kidney pie.
So, what brings you back to Girvan, Mr. Campbell?
Oh, I'm back to stay, Mr. McTavish.
All right. And where would that be?
At our new home. I'm going to buy Connor Oldhouse.
You are.
Oh, my husband can't wait to take possession. If it had been daylight, it'd have moved right in.
I'd move in right now if I were sure it had been aired and cleaned thoroughly. Mr. Niven, the agent, wouldn't still be around town, would he?
Oh, no, he's away home long before twilight. He lives quite far down the road.
Oh, well, I'd rather see the house by daylight first anyway. We can move in tomorrow.
No, I wouldn't haste too much till, till you've had a word with Tommy Niven.
Well, of course, we have to see him first. I'll be up at the crack of dawn waiting in his office till he comes in.
Well, I don't think in the morning he'll be by. He'll be over to Contrera, I would think, to the funeral.
What funeral?
Well, you see, it was this lad he engaged from the village here to clean up Connor Oldhouse.
Yes, I commissioned him to do that. What about him?
Well, it's not all that easy to get folks hereabouts to go near Connor Oldhouse, even in the daylight, after all that's happened there.
You mean Sir James and his daughter and their unfortunate deaths?
Aye, and then over all that, there's the...
The Shining Man?
Aye, him.
Oh, and in front of the lady. I didn't want to...
Oh, that's quite all right, Mr. McTavish. Don has told me all about the history of the house. It's sort of exciting, but... Well, I don't really believe in ghosts. I'm not scared.
That's my wife.
I don't know but what I'd be a wee bit canny if I were in your shoes. It wasn't only the doctor and his daughter. But there was what happened to the tinker as well. And poor slow Jock.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Who's the tinker?
And who's poor slow Jock?
Well, here. One at a time. The tinker was a nobody, a tramp, or a bum, I think you'd be calling him in the States. And a couple of years back, he moved himself in. It looked to be as if he lived in the kitchen, quite comfortable and happy for a few days. But then, he moved into the library, and...
And?
And they found him on the library couch. Sir James's couch, that was. Stark, raven mad, and at death's door, and his face all over with great black marks like he'd been in a peat bog.
Oh, he just had a dirty face. He probably got caught in the rain and went into Connor Old House for shelter and died quietly of pneumonia.
Raving? With the DTs, just like poor Jock?
What happened to him?
Oh, only the good Lord could maybe answer that. But he was just like the tinker, lying on the couch. Only he was dead. Oh, and an expression on his face only old Clootie himself could have written there.
Old Clootie?
The devil. Well, don't tell me Jock's face was blackened, too.
Just like the others. Oh, here. Now, I hope I'm not upsetting you.
Oh, no, nothing of the sort. Just the right thing to make us sleep like tops.
Well, the toddy should take care of that. But, I just thought you ought to be warned.
Come to bed, Don. Why are you watching out the window?
Nothing. It started to rain. Typical Scottish drizzle.
You think there's going to be a storm?
No, I don't.
What is it? Don, what did you see?
I didn't see anything. Go back to bed, Gigi.
Don, you're looking towards our house, aren't you? Connor House, I mean.
Yeah, yes, I... Well, I mean, that's the general direction, but it's...
I see it. I see what you saw.
What?
A light. Glimmering like a huge June bug, only it's shaped like a man. Oh, dear Lord, it is haunted, just as the innkeeper said. Look, Don, look, it's the Shining Man.
Now, wouldn't you say that's a fair beginning for a story of a haunted house? What is it that Gigi has seen, or thinks she saw? Some trick of refraction of the light from the inn windows against the misting drizzle of the rain? Or a real light carried by a real person who has no business in Connor Old House? I shall return shortly with Act Two.
Sally, Bobby, welcome home.
We couldn't spend the holidays away from home.
Welcome home, children, welcome home.
Mom and Dad, meet your new grandson, Daniel.
He looks just like you, Sally.
He has her nose, but I think he has Bobby's eyes. Uh-huh. Now, come on, let's sit down.
Oh, look, I knew there'd be Mogan David wine on the table. Nothing's changed.
I'll pour everyone a glass.
Mogan David. Whenever I see the name, it always makes me think about home. I remember it on the holidays and on the dinner table when I was little.
See, Daniel? This is where your mommy grew up.
I want to make the first toast to Daniel, the most beautiful grandson in the world. He smiled at me.
Ah, sweet, sweet memories. The family back together again. The holidays. How a glass of Mogan David wine brings back all the precious memories. No wonder for a lot of people, Mogan David means home. Sweet home.
Daniel. Welcome home.
Mogan David Wine Corporation, Chicago, Illinois.
Aw, he has daddy's eyes. Give him back! I can't see!
Mogan David, isn't that who made the 50-50, the MD 50-50?
I think so.
That was in your fine convenience stores everywhere?
Yes. Mogan David. Right up there with Boone's Farm.
Boone's Farm, yes.
Boone's Farm.
Whoa.
And Thunderbird. I think they still make Thunderbird.
Do they really? Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, I used to go into those places and buy my Blatz. Good old Blatz beer. Nope.
Yep.
No more.
Yes. Good old Blatz.
Blatz and Busch. I like Blatz and Busch. Those are my two favorites.
You know why they call it Blatz, right? It's the sound it makes coming out of you.
Oh, ouch.
Hey.
Oh, some bad memories coming back. Yes.
Yes.
Well, the cool thing about Blatz is they had these little brown glass bottles that look like barrels.
That's
cool.
Right. Oh, my God. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah. That's probably half the reason why I liked it. That's probably half the reason I liked it. Yeah.
There you go.
It's funny. A friend of mine went to Belize, and he brought me back a beer from Belize. Oh, my God. Did that taste like Blatz? Oh, I loved it.
And Stroh's. Stroh's was one you don't see anymore.
And what's interesting is I took an advertising class at the University of Akron, and the instructor he worked on Madison Avenue until he had a nervous breakdown. But he is the one who designed, was that the Stroh's or the Löwenbräu lion? They both had a lion or something.
I think they did, yeah.
So he either did the Löwenbräu or the Stroh's lion, but he actually designed that for the...
That might have been Löwenbräu with the lion, now that I'm thinking.
Probably was.
There's only one way to find out. Start buying beer.
Start buying up. That's good. Let's go, Dale. Get the next beer going so we can start.
That's right. That would be... We'll be doing our Foster Brooks show shortly thereafter.
You know what? One of these days I have to upload my bit that we did from the interview with Irving Plastered of the Alcoholics Unanimous group.
Sweet.
So, I'll have to upload that one of these days.
You must find that. That sounds good.
I did it originally for radio, then I redid it also for the TV show. So. What's funny is I posted it to YouTube, and every once in a while I do a search to find out where our stuff is, just a Google search.
Yeah.
And they had it posted on this therapy group. And I want to say, we're making fun of it, you know, aren't you? I said, oh, my God, I can't believe the therapy group put that on. Oh, my.
Dave, sometimes you and I are just an absolute, what do you call that, an ideal, a model. We are the perfect
model
of what, yes, of what not to be.
Of what not to be, absolutely.
Yes.
You know, and I'll tell you one more funny thing about that story, is I had done that. My brother did the interview for the original radio part of it, and I was Irving, which I was again on the TV version. What's funny is my brother was listening to it on a cassette. My dad came in, he thought it was really funny. He said, well, who's the drunk guy? He says, well, that's David. And all of a sudden, my dad didn't think it was so funny anymore.
Yeah, it's not funny.
Hey, I went to Foster Brooks U. What can I say? You know?
Method acting, Pop.
Yeah.
I believe in the method acting.
Yeah, my dad thought it was funny until he realized it was me. Then he didn't think it was so funny.
Yeah. That's a good one. That is good. Yeah. And that is a perfect dad for you, too.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely.
That is dad by definition, which is a good thing.
Yes. Yes.
Yep. They kept us on the straight and narrow as best they could, bless them.
If they could.
Back to The Shining, man.
Back to The Shining, part two.
Shining, man. From CBS,
sure.
Radio Mystery Theater.
Sure,
Percy Sutton is running for mayor of New York, but what do you really know about him? Did you know, for instance, that his father was born a slave and ended up as a high school principal and successful businessman. But Percy comes from Texas, born 1920, attended Hampton and Tuskegee Institutes, worked as a dishwasher, waiter, farm worker, subway conductor, enlisted in World War II, 99th Fighter Squadron, combat citations, rank of captain. He and his wife, Leatrice, live on 135th Street and have two grown children. Percy Sutton is a lawyer. He's served in the state assembly and is now Manhattan Borough President. He's a recognized authority on urban problems, active in legal, civic, and human rights. He's been honored by the Guardian Association, the UJA, the American Legion, the Conference on Soviet Jewry, the NAACP, the Alianza Hispano-Americana, the Italian-American Federation, and the American Jewish Congress. Percy Sutton has workable plans for the New York he loves. As you get to know him better, his character, the depth of his thinking, the strength of his determination, we hope you'll join us. Paid for by New Yorkers who want Percy Sutton for mayor.
From ghoulies and ghosties and long-leggedy beasties and things that go bump in the night, good Lord, deliver us. An old Scottish saying, and one that shivered through Gigi's mind that night, trickling in icy waves down her spine, till at last dawn coaxed her to sleep. But with the coming of morning, all the night fears seemed ridiculous, particularly in the face of Thomas Niven's cheerful scorn. The real estate agent was a giant of a man, an all-Scotland rugby player who boomed and beamed and bubbled with good cheer.
Oh, peck of tommy rot, the whole thing. Old wives' tales and gossips gabbling, eh? That tramp was sheer coincidence, and Sir James and his daughter, well, that was tragedy, if you will, but nothing supernatural about it.
Well, what about this boy, Jock, Mr. Niven?
Oh, yes, well, Jock. Now, there I do blame myself, Mr. Campbell. I should have realized that the boy wasn't up to the job. Never send a boy on a man's errand.
Is he really so young?
Not in years, Mrs. Campbell. A man grown, in body, that is. But he was a touch, well, you know, not quite right in the head. Mark you, that would never have interfered with the clean-up job. It was just the sort of thing for him under ordinary circumstances. And he and his mother could always use the money.
You say ordinary circumstances. I thought you were telling us that there's nothing extraordinary about...
About Connor Oldhouse? No, I don't believe there is.
Well, then what caused the poor fellow's death?
Oh, I don't know, Mrs. Campbell.
It couldn't have been the shining man, could it?
Oh, good heavens. They've gotten to you with that old gibberish, have they? Well, whatever you heard, forget it. There is no such thing.
I'm afraid there is.
What?
I saw it.
We both saw it. Last night.
Where?
Well, he seemed to be in Connor Oldhouse.
Oh, and you were looking from the village?
From our window at the inn, yes.
And this would be after dark?
Yes.
Oh, yes, well, I've seen that myself. Whenever it's misting very heavily. That was no ghost you saw, Mr. and Mrs. Campbell. That was Ignis Fatuus, Friar's Lanthorn, if you wish.
What?
What we call will-o'-the-wisp, honey. Caused by swamp gas, I think.
Yes, just the way of it. Sulfurated hydrogen, actually, rising from rotting vegetation and such, and spontaneously ignited in spite of the damp, so that it glows in the dark.
Well, you think that's what the boy saw and that it frightened him to death?
Oh, yes, very like.
What did the doctors say caused his death?
Sheer physical fright, acting on an already faulty brain. Oh, I say hello, that's overdue. Been on the way for a couple of days. I'm afraid we're in for a bit of bad weather. Shouldn't bother you too much, though, since I'm sorry to say the house isn't ready to receive you as yet. I haven't been able to find anyone else to get over there.
Mr. Niven, before we take any further action, perhaps I should let my wife see the property.
Well, now, look, you're not thinking of backing out on me, man. Great heavens, you have the bargain of the century in that house.
What I'm beginning to wonder is, why?
Oh, I can tell you that. Idle tongue, sheer and simple. How I picked it up myself.
You mean the house is yours? Well, you didn't tell me that, Don.
I didn't know, dear. I thought Mr. Niven was only acting as an agent for the original owner.
Oh, well, you see, actually, I bought it from Sir James' estate for my grandmother and put it in her name before she died. Never had a chance to move in. So it has stood empty the last few years. I will say, however, that if you're considering backing out on the sale, in my opinion, you'd be a fool, young man.
Well, it isn't the house, Mr. Niven. It's... Well, it's its reputation.
Well, then, Mrs. Campbell, I tell you what I'll do. I do feel a little put out that I didn't have it ready for you, as I promised you and your husband. So, as soon as the rain lets up, since I can't find anyone else, I'll go out and clean the house myself.
Well, I shouldn't think a man would want...
Oh, my dear girl, I'm a sailor, and you've only to look at my boat to see what a first-class housekeeper I am. I promise you she'll be shining like a new pin. Not only that, but I'll want to set your mind at rest. I'll spend the night there, too, and show you there isn't a single solitary thing to fear in Connor Oldhouse.
I will admit that I had misgivings. I'd even partially allayed them by sending a wire that morning before we had gone to Mr. Niven's office, asking my Uncle Flaxman to come up to Girvan, post-haste, by the next train. But Mr. Niven was so obviously physically powerful that I pushed them aside. If I had known the terror that awaited him and us, I would never... But well, that is only hindsight. In no time, it was the afternoon of the next day, and Uncle Flax had arrived, and we were briefing him on all that happened in the taproom.
Oh, dear, 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 dear. Just listen to that rain. It's pity. I'm really very anxious to have a look at this strange house of yours.
You don't think it really can be haunted, do you? I mean, you can prove it isn't, can't you?
Well, I don't know, Gigi. It may very well be.
But I thought you were a ghost detective. I mean, an investigator who proved that they were fakes. All your famous cases...
Oh,
were...
not all, my dear. Most, perhaps, but certainly not all.
Are you trying to tell me that there really are such things as ghosts?
I think there is such a thing as the human soul, dear girl. A spirit that has its own life independent of the body. I've seen too much evidence of it in my investigations not to believe in it. But it does not necessarily follow that there is some lost soul haunting Connor Oldhouse.
I don't know. Now you're really beginning to scare me. I'm really afraid, terribly afraid, that there's some awful, malign, dreadful thing that lurks there by night that doesn't want anyone disturbing it, that kills to keep it for its own.
Well, if there is, my dear, then we must exorcise it. But first we must find out what it is.
In spite of the weather, we would have tried to go over to Connor Oldhouse that afternoon, but the driver refused to take his horse out again in that torrential rain. And by the time the rain had slacked off, it was too late, for the long Scottish twilight was beginning to fall. Gigi was lying down before supper when I came downstairs to find my uncle gazing out the window through the peculiar half-light.
Donald, come here.
Yes, Uncle.
Over toward the house, you see that? That light patch in the darkness?
Where?
Framed by the house, as though it came from one of the windows.
Yes. Yes, I see it.
The darker it gets, the more that light glows. It seems to be taking on shape. Is that what you saw last night?
Yes, I think so, but could that be a candle or lamplight from the house?
No, the color is wrong. It's not soft and yellow, and there's no flicker. Just a steady blue efflorescence.
You think it might be Will-o'-the-Wisp?
No, it's too steady. Hello. There goes some lamplight. Moving from room to room, it seems.
And the other glow is gone.
It doesn't like the real light, it would seem.
What do you think, Uncle?
Without any facts to go on, very little. I only wonder. But I do know three things.
What, sir?
First, that it is too dark for us to venture out there tonight. Second, that when we do, we will not take Gigi with us. And third, we had better leave tomorrow at crack of dawn.
With the first rays of light, and with Gigi still fast asleep, we were off by carriage for the long drive to the ridge. When we pulled up in the cobblestone yard in front of Connor Oldhouse, it was as silent as a tomb. Only the gulls screaming out to sea.
Could your Mr. Niven have left already? Do you suppose he'd missed him?
Well, I don't see how. He came out here by carriage, so... Well, he'd have had to use the road. We'd have passed him. Well, came from the stables. He must still be there.
That horse sounds frightened. Come along, Don. You've been in the house before. Now, you take it. I'll take the stables.
He left me. I hurried up the stairs of the porte cochere, and after testing the handle, swung open the heavy hall door. The gloom of the wet dawning and the heavy smell of stagnant air filled the great hall as I looked around its dreary emptiness. The silence inside the house was oppressive. I called Mr. Niven's name, but the noise only echoed through the house, jarring on the stillness. I walked, almost timidly, to the middle of the hall, my footsteps silent on the carpet of accumulated layer upon layer of dust. Wherever Niven had been cleaning, he certainly hadn't started here. I felt a wave of panic spiral up from my stomach, and I called his name again. Mr. Niven? Mr. Niven?
Don. It's all right. It's all right. It's only me. There's no sign of him here.
No. You didn't find anything at the stable?
No, just a poor horse bathed in a lather of sweat, shying at the blink of an eye. Something's happened to scare him, but not in the stable.
Or here, it seems. I don't see how Niven can be in this house.
Oh, why?
Well, you can see the dust everywhere. And my footsteps. No sign of any others.
He's here in this house.
How do you know?
I can sense it, and the vibrations are bad. Come, which way are the living quarters?
This way.
Including the library?
Right through this door. It seems to be stuck. Oh, there.
Good Lord. Oh, that smell.
The smell of death. Let me pass.
No, Uncle. No, don't.
Come, help me. I've found your Mr. Niven, I think.
Oh. Oh.
Is this he?
Yes. Is he dead?
No, I don't think so, but we've got to get him out of here and home before he is.
What happened to him?
I don't know, but whatever it was, he was trying to run from it when he fell against the inside of the door. Come, my boy, if we're to save his life, we must get him out of here.
I hope you're not listening to this alone. Not that I want to scare you. Yet. After all, we still have no idea what else was inside that room that drove a strong, healthy athlete in the prime of life to the edge of death, do we? For that matter, we don't even know if it is still here. I'll be back shortly with Act 3.
Today, lots of banks have free checking. The difference is, with free checking at Chase, you have lots of banks. Over 250, in fact. 250 Chase branches where you can cash checks and make deposits. With $500 in savings at any Chase branch, you'll earn high interest. You'll get free personal checking. You can have one statement banking, numerical checklisting, cash reserve checking. And you have the advantage of over 250 branches where you can cash your Chase check. So you're never far from your money with free personal checking at Chase. Give yourself the Chase advantage. After all, what good is free checking if you can't find a place to cash your checks? So,
take advantage of the Chase advantage.
Member FDIC.
That's right. You can do all your own online banking now with a little program that we call Go Chase Yourself. That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, what has happened to customer service in our day? Everything's robotic. No more humanoids.
Yep. At least not English speaking words.
Dave, we lost you there for a minute.
You can't hear me?
Can't hear you, brother.
Let me re-log in then.
Ah, now you're back.
Oh, am I back? Okay, okay.
You're back.
Okay.
You have returned.
I'm front two.
Yes, you're back. What's wrong with it? It's all behind you now.
You don't want to know. Yeah, don't. Well, yeah. That's not the only thing behind me. But yes. Hey,
yes.
Wonderful tale going. Wonderful ghost tale going here on the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, and. Just what an eerie feeling this whole thing is giving us. The great music and the sound effects and the acting that's making this story just a really good ghost story.
Very atmospheric.
Yes. Yeah. And good old Chase. Again, that's Chase is still around as a lot of these products are, but nobody uses these jingles anymore. I love these old jingles. You know, when I hear cars going by my house and when we're out and about, you know, when you hear all this auto tune stuff going on, you know, it's a way to make people so they aren't off key and stuff. It just it's a shame that you don't have the jingles or the amazing jingle singers.
Yes. That's a part of Americana I miss as well, Dave. They made products fun. Even if you had no intention of buying it, you knew what that product was when you heard the jingle.
Right. And it just, they either have some kind of signature, like we've got the tire company in this Northeast Ohio, where it kind of whispers its name. I don't know why it's escaping me. I guess because I don't need any tires right now. But that's at least something that you can recognize when you hear it and you know what it's all about. And the jingles were the same thing. They could, if you had a jingle that worked, people knew your product whether they used it or not. And that's what effective advertising is.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was clearly very effective on our generation, Dave, because we hear these jingles and we automatically are taken back to what those products were.
Right, and that's what, you know, another thing that my advertising professor was saying, you know, you may have the best commercial in the world, but if you don't remember what the product was after it was a terrible commercial. And I know I've talked to people a lot that say, hey, you see this great commercial? This was what was it about? What were they selling? Oh, gee, I don't really remember, but it was a great commercial, you know?
Yeah.
And you have to go about, you know, sometimes you watch commercials, what was that actually about?
Yep.
It's not a great commercial if you don't know where the product was when the commercial's over, you know, but yeah, some of these things
that come up. Or if it doesn't make
you
buy this stuff, too, that's another telltale sign.
Because it kind of kills the point. Like in our case, sometimes, you know, it's 30 plus years ago that this was on, and yet you and I can still remember the product. That's a heck of a commercial.
Yep.
Hey, we have a couple more join the chat as we're ready to head into our third segment, Dale.
Yeah, CW, an Amish comedian. Oh my gosh, the Amish comedian. We're going to have to welcome him with open arms and hose and fields to hoe for the final part of our classic tale from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. This one's called The Shining Man.
Man. No, The Shining Man.
Yeah, that's what I said. The Shining Man.
"'Twas brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves, and the mom rats outgrabe. Beware the Jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the Jujubird, and shun the frumious Bandersnatch." I mention this quote from Lewis Carroll not because it means anything, which it doesn't, but because it suggests evil incarnate and crawling things calculated to send a shudder to the roots.
The indescribable, fetid odor from that haunted room was so stifling and smothering that it almost overpowered my Uncle Flax and me as we struggled to carry the big, heavy, inert body of Niven from the room. We half-dragged him through the door to the relief of fresh air and the carriage outside. How is he, Uncle?
In a rather bad way. He needs medical attention as soon as possible.
Hey, giddy up! Giddy up! Go on! You think he was scared to death?
Like the poor guy he sent up to clean the house before?
Not to death, since he's still alive, but something has given him a shock, all right. A profound shock.
Something? You mean the place is haunted?
I didn't say that.
But you meant it.
Perhaps, in a sense.
What do you mean, a sense? When we opened the door and that awful stench poured out, you said it was the smell of death.
It's a figure of speech. But I'm afraid only time will tell. Now, hurry now. Get back to the inn.
Oh, Mr. McTavish, what's going on? Where is my husband?
Oh, he's scrubbing from top to toe with lye soap, as Mr. Lowe himself did first.
And my uncle?
Well, after he carried all the clothes out and started them burning, he went back to the bedside of Mr. Niven.
Burn the clothes? Well, what was the matter with the clothes?
Oh, I don't know. Contaminated somehow from that evil house of warlocks and ghoulies.
Don, darling, are you all right?
Well, I feel a little as if I'd been skinned alive. Otherwise, yes,
what
fine.
Do you mean, skinned alive?
Well, the scrubbing and that strong laundry soap.
Is that all? Oh, can I touch you now?
Oh, darling, I want you to hold me and never let me go.
Oh. Now tell me what happened. What about our house?
Our house? Now, I wish the damn thing had burned to the ground before I ever saw it. That's what I wish had happened.
Mr. Niven, you think you can tell me the rest of what happened now that you're feeling a little better?
Well, I could try. But I didn't know. Where was I? Who did you say you were?
My name is Flaxman Lowe. Now, you started cleaning the back of the house, the kitchen, the dining room, the pantry, the living room, so on, eh?
Yes, it was daytime, but I got there later than I'd hoped.
I understand. So, suddenly, night was upon you, and you lit a lamp, eh?
Yes.
So, after you lit the lamp, you went into the library, right?
Yes. I went in. Oh, that awful smell hit me and turned me sick to the pit of my stomach. I must have passed out.
How do you suppose you got to the door where we found you?
I woke up again, and the lamp had gone out, but there was this ghastly light. I don't want to remember the damn house. Why didn't I burn it the day I...
And when he came to, Mr. Niven told me the lamp had gone out, but suddenly he was aware that the darkness was clearing. A feeble light was filtering down through it from above. He looked up at the ceiling and saw there an irregular patch of pale phosphorescent luminescence which grew gradually brighter and brighter.
The Shining Man.
And he had the impression that through the radiance above, someone was looking down on him. And through the thickening atmosphere of drowsy horror, choking and revolted by the growing odor, he looked up again.
To see what?
To see the brightness dim and dark smears show through it, all running together into something that swelled out and downward like a fat, green, white, evil face from which great drops of black dripping fluids fell like rain.
Oh, good Lord.
And suddenly, fear and loathing broke his chains enough for him to run to the door, where he plunged forward into a dark red vacancy to remember no more.
So the place is haunted. By whom and why?
Yes, Uncle, why? And who is the Shining Man? Why does his ghost haunt Connor Oldhouse?
I can only answer two of those questions.
Which?
I mean, I can guess the answers, who it is and that he is no ghost. As to proving it and the why, that will have to wait until tomorrow. So, here we are again, back at the library.
At least it smells a little better today.
Nevertheless, put your handkerchief over your mouth and nose, as I'm doing, before we enter it. Now, come over to the couch.
Why the handkerchiefs?
Oh, it's simply that I believe the dust in this room to be poisonous. Niven inhaled too much of it, hence his condition. It is literally piled up around the couch here.
Uncle, look. Above on the ceiling, a long discolored stain. You see that?
Yes. So I should have expected. I think that explains everything.
A blood stain on the ceiling explains everything? What do you mean? Oh, wait a minute. Look.
What?
You see those tracks? A cat has been walking over this sofa. Can you explain that? And what do you mean about the blood stain?
My dear boy, the stain on the ceiling has nothing to do with blood. It is simply a patch of mold and fungus. As for what you call cat's footsteps, look at them more carefully and you will see they look more like raindrops.
Raindrops? In a perfectly watertight room where the dust is so dry the slightest movement makes it rise like smoke?
Ah, the dust. When we came to fetch Niven, I noticed how green and fine it was and how enormous an accumulation of it there was in this room. Why? Because this dust is like the powder in a puffball formed of minute spores.
And that's why it's poisonous?
Well, I have no doubt that from this dust, as we shall call it, within a few days a specimen of fungus could be cultivated, which would prove to be African in origin.
But if the dust is so dangerous, aren't we running the risk of...
Well, not if we don't inhale too much. And last night, incidentally, I saw that Niven's coat was covered with it, and that above the collar and along the upper part of the sleeve, as though they had dropped from above, was a spatter of gummy marks which corresponded to these so-called raindrops.
What else would you call them?
Oh, drops from the stain on the ceiling, caused by the unnamed fungus I mentioned, which decays as it matures, liquefying into a dark mucilage which drops down, diffusing a repulsive smell, which disappears as it dries and leaves only the dust of the spores. And those raindrops are most certainly what killed the boy, the tinker, and Sir James and his daughter.
How?
Well, I would guess that the fungus is singularly malignant, acting through the skin to the brain, then interpenetrating all the tissues of the body with terrible rapidity, and causing a violent and horrible death.
Which Mr. Niven escaped because the drops touched only his clothing and not his skin.
Exactly.
Ah, oh, I see. But what about the light? The ghost must have caused all this.
Why don't we go upstairs and perhaps we can find out.
Look, Uncle. Look. The light.
Yes, son, I see it.
When, now it's gone. It just quivered for a moment as though...
Where would you say it came from?
From that dark end of the hall.
Between those two doors? Yes, that's where I saw it.
But where could it have gone to?
What actually come from? Which room? You take the left, I'll take the right.
We searched both of the rooms with a fine-tooth comb, but there was no sign of anything. Then Uncle Flaxman had a brilliant idea. We paced off the width of each room inside, then the total yardage outside in the hall. Between the rooms was a common wall which must, by our measurements, be some 3 feet wide, but no door in either to a closet. In the hall, we looked at the seemingly solid wall between the doors. Then Uncle Flaxman said,
"Close your room door while I close mine, Don."
"Right, Uncle."
Now that it's shadowed again in here, back up toward the stairwell. Ah, you see that?
A glimmer of light as though it were behind the solid wall.
Which means the wall can't be solid. Come here. Hello.
Well, there must be some sort of secret room or closet there. Let me see. Uncle!
What is it?
There's some sort of a catch here to the upper panel.
Probably a means of opening it to ventilate the space between the walls. Try it, my boy, try it.
I have it. Oh, that smell again.
Ah, and look.
Good Lord.
What is it?
I fancy it is the body of the missing black man who was supposed to have worshipped his master and his mistress.
Black? But he's white. What's that shining white stuff all over him?
A fungus? The fungus. The shining man, whose phosphorescent glow on damp evenings sometimes shone through the little window at the end of the closet and scared everyone in the countryside half to death. Not a ghost, but just a poor man who met a terrible death in a coffin of his own making.
Oh, Don, how horrible. Who was he, anyway?
Sir James Mackay's faithful servant.
Ah, but remember, I said slave, and I think not so faithful.
What do you mean, Uncle?
I have always intended to devote myself to the study of Obeah.
Obeah? What is that?
Voodoo. A fetish-worshipping religion of sorcery and conjuration. In the dead man's hands were the remains of two crude figures, a man and a woman, coated with the fungus.
You mean he was responsible for the deaths of Sir James and his daughter?
Or for wishing his gods to take vengeance on them for the virtual slavery in which he had been held all his life. Poetic irony, isn't it, that the monster he called into being in the end was the means of his own destruction?
Oh, that house. I could never live in it now.
Well, don't worry, darling. We never will. What should be done about it, Uncle?
It should be burnt to ashes, just as we did our clothes. It's the only way the spirit of evil will ever be exorcised from Connor Oldhouse.
That same night, Connor Oldhouse went up in a pillar of smoke, its funeral pyre lighting the Scottish night. Interesting that earlier that same evening, Mr. Niven, now recovered, had left the inn for his home. Don Campbell had ridden alone to the post office for a letter which didn't arrive, and Mr. Lowe had gone for a long ramble to blow the cobwebs away, as he said. But who or what caused the fire, no one will ever know. I'll be back shortly.
Being in show business, I know opportunity never knocks twice. So listen to me, Debbie Reynolds, and hurry down to the Singer Sale Too Big to Miss, where you'll find your favorite sewing machine at unbelievably low prices, like the Fashion Mate Zigzag machine with a front drop-in bobbin that's easy to see and a snap to replace. It's only $129.95, including cabinet. The big sale at Singer. It's one opportunity you can't afford to miss.
Prices optional at participating dealers.
You know, when you're making a shirt, and you've got to worry about all those different things, like material and dyes and stitches and buttons, and the collar and the cuffs and the label and buttonholes and seams and pockets, and the cut and the style and the fit, there's a lot of ways to miss. But when making shirts is what you've been doing for as long as the Arrow Shirt Company, you don't miss. Which is why it's hard to miss with Arrow. Arrow makes shirts that look good, feel good, and fit good. From the collar to the tail. Shirts that look like today, but don't look like yesterday a month after you bought them. Shirts that are worth exactly what they cost, button for button and stitch for stitch. Shirts. That's what Arrow makes and sells more of than anybody else.
It's hard to miss with Arrow. Arrow shirts.
Arrow, America's shirt maker.
Once again, in the interest of fairness, Hillman Cohan Vision Center gives equal time to one of our critics.
Regarding your great eyeglass guarantee, I quote, any lens that is broken will be replaced free of charge. Any other part, including frame, that is broken or damaged will be repaired or replaced free of charge. That's all very straightforward. It goes on. There is no limit to the number of repairs and replacements under this certificate during the one-year period. No questions there either. Well, that's the problem. Where's all that beautiful, mind-boggling legal language that sends people rushing to lawyers like me? You know, like, we the guarantor and you the guarantee. Where's the fine print? Oh, have a heart. A little ipso facto never hurt anyone.
Put on a happy face at your Vision Center.
Hillman Cohen Vision Center in Watchung, New Jersey, Route 22 at Mountain Avenue. Open daily 10 to 9, Saturday till 5. Master charge and Bank AmeriCard accepted.
Want to live in a world of adventure this summer? Do things you never thought you would? Like ride a horse through green countryside, sail your own boat on a sparkling lake, learn gymnastics, cheerleading, karate, and water skiing, star in your own radio program, start some lifelong friendships. Or maybe your idea of adventure is to build and launch rockets, explore caves, play roller hockey, or try some whitewater canoeing. Well, I've got a place where you can do all these things and a lot more. I'm Victor Fink, the owner of Camp Leonard and Leonore in the Berkshires. My family's been involved in this boys and girls camp for over 50 years. If you're between 6 and 16 and full of spirit and adventure and want fun with new friends, Camp Leonard and Leonore is for you. Have your parents call me, Victor Fink, at 688-0770. That's area code 212-688-0770. Make this summer an adventure in camping at Camp Leonard and Leonore.
Mr. Flaxman Lowe has proved and demonstrated that the shining man in Connor Oldhouse was not supernatural, that he wasn't a ghost. When is a ghost not a ghost? All I know is that fungus-swathed corpse, desiccated and decayed, but still propped upright in its narrow tomb, will haunt me the rest of my life. Our cast included Bob Caliban, Morgan Fairchild, Ralph Bell, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by General Electric Citizen Band Radios and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
WOR Mystery Theater was also brought to you in part by ShopRite Supermarkets, where you get a lot more for a little less. The preceding program is furnished by CBS Radio. WOR News Time, 8:10.
All right, and that wraps up CBS Radio Mystery Theater. It was
everything you promised
it would be, Dave, a thriller.
Yes, a wonderful story. Actually came from us, adapted from a story earlier that supposedly took place at the turn of the last century. So fun, amazing, scary tale all in one.
Is there a moral for this story?
Yeah, it's not done until, you know, the moral's there. So I think we can work one in here.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents A Garrulous Moral of the Story.
Apologies to Gar and everyone else. Be careful when buying a haunted house. Have it inspected because there may be a fungus among us.
Show starts in 3 minutes.
You bet. Hey, but you know what? Our topic this week has been ghosts for this weekend, Dale. And I went out on a special assignment, and I think we need to roll
before
that out
right
now.
Dave, before that assignment, I'm dying to hear it, but we got a brand new chatter today, hopefully a longtime listener, and I've got a little something for them.
Okay.
Oh yeah, I think that Barbie should all be done by hand. And when I see your tractor, I want to hoe your land.
I want to hoe your land. I want to hoe your land.
There we go.
Yeah, you got that combine.
garbage I don't understand. If you burnt a heathen, you let me hoe your land. Please let me hoe your land. I want to hoe your land.
And when I'm hoeing, I feel holy inside. But John Deere tractors are forbidden. I can't ride, I can't ride, I can't ride. My mule sure is something. Don't cost no 20 grand. Then I feed him carrots. He helps me plow my land.
He helps me plow my land. He helps me plow my land.
And when they're plowing, they feel happy outside. I used to have another mule, but he died, but he died, yes, he died.
You English, met your tractors, you'll surely all be damned. If you weren't so lazy, you'd go and hoe your land.
Now go and hoe your land. Please go and hoe your land. You'd better hoe your land.
There we go. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
The Electric Amish.
Indeed they were.
Yep, yep.
But back to our topic of ghosties.
Of ghosties, yes. We had a little job to do, and so I done it. If you want to hit the button there, Dale. I do this.
Oh, sure. It's, well, it's Dickie Goodman time in a way.
This is Dave Binkley, and I'm on assignment in a haunted house, Fort Erie House Radio. I think I see Casper the Friendly Ghost over there. Casper, can we have a word with you?
Hello. Is it me you're looking for?
Now, Casper, I understand that when you first came to Hollywood, you were a stuntman. Why did you stop being a stuntman?
Well, I said no, 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 no. I can't take it no more. I'm tired of waking up on the floor.
Tell me, Casper, what did you think the first time you found out that you could fly?
Could this be the magic of Thailand? Could it be magic?
It must be very difficult to find friends since you're a ghost. How does it feel when you finally meet a new friend?
I got chills, they're multiplying, and I'm losing control.
Do you have a best friend? Would you care to talk about the Ghostly Trio?
I will, I will, I will, I will.
So what can you tell us about Stretch?
Dress a raccoon in Dollar Trooper. Trying hard to look like Gary Cooper.
Can you tell us anything about Fatso?
King of the Road.
And what do you have to say about Stinky?
Everyone considered him the coward of the county.
I'm surprised you don't have anything nice to say about Stinky.
Don't be sad. Don't be sad. 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Now I heard that you once visited Toledo, Ohio.
I haven't been there for the
And how did you even find out about Toledo, Ohio?
You ask how I know of Toledo, Ohio. Well, I spent a week there one day.
Looking back on it, what do you think about your days of stardom?
Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever and a day.
You know, Casper, you've been in cartoons, children's records, feature films, and the Saturday morning show. Is there anything that you haven't done that you would like to?
And we keep getting richer, but we can't get our picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Thank you for spending time with us, Casper. We will forever love your cartoons.
And
Dave Binkley returning you to Erie House Radio.
There we go.
But thank you for braving the weather to go out there and do that.
It was. Well, you know what? It's always like that around the Howden House. It can be the middle of the day, and that's what it'll be like there around the Howden House. So,
if it's a good one, yes, that's true. If it's a good haunted house, it's always, always, always inclement.
Yes, yes. If not outside, definitely inside. So, hey, and we've still got time left. We might be able to spin that good old wheel of radio.
Why not? Hey, anybody want to call in and give that wheel a spin?
Yep.
You know, we've got a phone. Just dial carefully at 646-378-0264, live listeners, if you like, and just give that wheel a tug, and we'll play something fun. In the meantime, we haven't heard from Vincent in a long time.
No, we haven't.
Ladies and gentlemen, poison doesn't always come in bottles, and it isn't always marked with the skull and crossbones of danger. Poison can take the form of words and phrases and acts, the venom of racial and religious hatred. Here in the United States, perhaps more than ever before, we must learn to recognize the poison of prejudice and to discover the antidote to its dangerous effects. Evidences of racial and religious hatred in our country place a potent weapon in the hands of our enemies, providing them with the ammunition of criticism. Moreover, group hatred menaces the entire fabric of democratic life. As for the antidote, you can fight prejudice first by recognizing it for what it is, and second by actively accepting or rejecting people on their individual worth, and by speaking up against prejudice and for understanding. Remember, freedom and prejudice can't exist side by side. If you choose freedom, fight prejudice.
Tell him, Vincent.
Yes, absolutely. So a wonderful picture with Vincent Price and Lauren Green with Elliot Lewis on the radio blog, as it was a kind of a publicity still from the Mutual Radio Theater. So
we had a caller and we lost them. Perhaps that caller will call right back for a little spin on the wheel.
No, we can hang on a few seconds to see if they'll call back. We can do that.
We can certainly do that. Let's see. Maybe there's something we can listen to in the meantime. And if you don't call, we're going to continue this. Okay. It was an empty threat. I can only take so much myself.
Yep.
But
it
don't go anywhere yet. Guards, we got 11 minutes before it's guard time.
Hey, there it goes. Came back in.
There you go. A welcome. A wonderful. Thank you for coming to the studio.
Oh, yeah. Stop the madness. Stop the parma.
That's right. Welcome, CW.
No, you're more than welcome. I just had to save everybody out there in cyberspace from more of that the parma. Oh, gosh. Now you got that in your head for the rest of the weekend.
It's another earworm. That's right.
Unless, of course, you step up to that wheel or radio and give it a nice tug, and maybe that they could use that as a earworm as instead.
There I go, up the podium, up the stairs, and spinning, here we go.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, see, what did you do today?
Well, I spent the whole morning in a travel bureau.
We're planning a trip?
No, they're planning the trip. We're just going.
Where are we going?
Well, I haven't decided yet, but I know one thing. If you like to travel, it's best to go somewhere.
Yeah, as long as you're packed, you might as well wave to somebody. But how can you take a trip when you don't know where you're going?
Well, that's what the man in the travel bureau kept asking me. And so he suggested a boat trip around the world, and he said it would cost $3,000.
Around the world?
Mm-hmm.
$3,000?
Yeah, and you know how I always try to save money.
Oh, of course.
So I asked him if it would be cheaper if I bought return tickets.
What did he say to that?
Well, he said, lady, I don't know about your trip, but I'm leaving right now.
And he did?
And he did. Yeah.
I thought he would. Well, maybe he needs a little holiday.
Well, anyway, while I was there, I talked to this woman. She said she needed some advice.
This woman?
Yes.
Needed some advice.
Yes. She said she was going to fly across the country, and she wondered if it was as safe as going by train. And I said, well, that was entirely up to her.
Entirely up to her?
Yes. I said riding on an airplane is just as safe as going by train, as long as you don't stick your head out the window while it's going through a tunnel.
Is this in a plane or in a train?
No, it was in the travel.
Travel bureau, oh, yeah. That's my question.
Yes, and then I gave another woman some good advice.
Some more advice.
Yes, she said that every year she took a trip, and last year she hired a car and traveled all over Europe, and the experience was very broadening.
And what did you say?
And I said, well, I can see it was, so this time, why don't you get out and walk now and then?
Yeah, I hope she appreciated that.
Oh, well, I don't know, but you never heard such a big laugh.
Started to laugh.
No, the woman in back of her.
Oh, there was a woman in back of her.
Yes, the one who fibbed about her age.
Oh, she did the laughing.
Yes, oh, she was 40 if she was a day.
Really?
And she had the nerve to tell me she was still a young girl.
She did, huh?
Yes, she said, no matter where I go this year, it won't be as nice as the trip I made back to Ireland where I was born. And I said, when was that? And she said, 15 years ago.
Yeah, well, the reason she fibbed is maybe she wanted to go half air.
Well, anyway, the travel agent poked his head in the door again, and he whispered, has that silly woman gone yet? And so I whispered back, and I said, I don't know which one you mean. I only spoke to three of them.
The great George and Gracie.
Classic Burns and Allen there, and during the early years of their TV show, as it went on, they and liked it out a little bit. They had their shows ran a little short, possibly by design, and they came out from the curtain. They did these little Say Goodnight Gracie bits, which were very, very reminiscent of their vaudeville act. And so if you want to see what they did in vaudeville, a part of it, this would be that would be a way to see a little bit of what they did in vaudeville. So
yeah, and they did
really
a little
cool.
bit of a old soft shoe routine
yes.
on the stage.
And Gracie was a heck of a singer as well. Although George did sing, even back then, he wasn't, even in vaudeville, he wasn't successful as a singer. Not until he got to be in his 80s, then he got a deal with Mercury Records, and he hit the charts with I Wish I Was 18 Again, and ended up with a 3-record deal out of Mercury. For that. And I have all 3 records, by the way. And one he even did before in around 1971 or 72, I think. So
it helps
wow.
when you're God. When you're God, it helps.
Yes.
That's true. Of
pretty
course,
much
when
get
you're
what
Dra-
you want.
Yeah. Or when you're Dracula or Saruman or a evil Sith Lord, a.k.a. Christopher Lee.
There you go.
Who hit it big with a heavy metal album.
Yes, he did.
I believe he was in his 90s. Or he's a little older than George Burns.
Yep.
So I'm waiting for Betty White to come out with a heavy metal album.
Yeah, or punk rock or something.
Punk rock,
oh, yeah.
that would be more Betty.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I just saw an interview that they were doing, with TV legend Paul Henning, who, of course, who had created Green Acres and Pedigo Junction and Beverly Hillbillies. He was talking about George Burns, because he wrote on radio as well, and when he was assigned, he said George Burns really, he kind of led it, but he really didn't come into himself until they moved to television, because it was his idea to talk to the camera and such, and he really took command when they went to television. So,
yep.
Outstanding.
George is the man. We'll be back next week, gang. Not that we're going anywhere real fast. We still got a little time here, but next weekend. It's kind of a reunion weekend, isn't it, Dave?
Yes, it is. Interesting with Theater 5 and the couple next door and this little thing called WCRS Radio Stage.
Yeah, that's time again for WCRS with a game of chicken. And then on Saturday, it's the return of CBS Radio Mystery Theater with Fateful Reunion. So it's all about reunions.
All about reunions. That time
of year. Hope I don't get any strange calls that night.
Sorry if you're right for that joke. It was sorry if you're right for that joke.
Yeah, I know. Like my first wife or something. Good Lord.
Oh, no.
It's Satan. Satan. Okay. Also, Gar the Ghoul coming up in just 2 minutes and 40 seconds or so over on the Twitches there. You can find links on them. They're Facebooks.
Yeah, go to Horrible Horror on Facebook. Yeah, Horrible Horror or Gar Gernstein, and you'll be able to get the direct link to take you right to Twitch TV and the Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul in his good 3 to 4 hour show that he'll do live tonight on the internet.
Yep.
So that's what we got. That's...
Yeah. And Halloween is coming up. We are plotting. We are scheming. Do we want to give any sneak information yet, or shall we withhold?
I don't know how much you want to give away, because we're still in the scheming plot, but there is a particular night that we already have. Two nights we already have planned, Saturday night and at least one other night are already entrenched.
Yeah, you know we're gonna do. You know we're gonna do some form or another of War of the Worlds on October 30th. That's just our annual custom here. We haven't missed yet in 5 years. So,
nope.
We hope you'll join us that week, because we're gonna go probably 4 or 5 nights in a row.
Yep. I think it was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Maybe even Tuesday if we get that ambitious.
Yeah, if we get a little crazy and a little lucky theming these things up, as we are wont to do, that will be it, man. Lots of Halloween old-time radio programming coming your way.
We'll be here before you know it. So lock those doors, but keep your radio open.
Yes. And don't lose your way to the front door here at Erie House Radio. We thank everybody for joining us tonight. The Electric Amish Comedian, CW, thanks for calling and joining us. Fogsbane and GGSI Paper bailed on us, but that's okay. So is good old Bob there. Had no cigar. We will see you Friday night at 8:30 Eastern. Drive them up and drink home safely.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him when next we meet in Frankenstone. Don't come alone.
Candle's not out. There.
There you go.
Cover. I had to cover a little bit.
But it was stuck on zero, so to me, I thought it was done. But
it
right.
was stuck for
colors.
A minute.
Yeah, it was. Thanks, Blog Talk. Thanks,
yeah.
Blog Talk.
Make us look unprofessional. Okay, more unprofessional. Okay, more on professional, but still.
Okay, I was going to say we don't need their help for that.
Yeah.
Well, you've been unprofessional for years.
That's right.
If you mean me, you're absolutely
nobody,
right.
Maybe that's why nobody pays us to do this.
That's right, and we thank you for noticing.
probably hard to. Probably hard to not notice. So
it goes over most people's heads, but no, you can't get nothing by CW.
No.
Well, thank you. I am the all-seeing, all-knowing, and all-know-it-all.
And that is why I am so pleased that you're joining me while Dave is running down to get inducted.
Yep.
It'll be two weeks from yesterday. No, 2 weeks from tonight.
2 weeks from tonight, yes.
Yes.
Oh, very good. Yeah.
Yep. 911.
Well, thank you for asking me.
No, it's always great when you join us, as you are so much more knowledgeable than I am, so I get to sit back and listen and learn from you too when that happens.
Aw, shuck.
But and I also thank you for enjoying the little interviews type things that I put together there.
I think they're wonderful. They're very inventive. They're fun. And I'm glad someone else is doing all that work because I'm too lazy.
You just described Dave, fun and inventive.
And lazy. You got
oh.
it all there.
No, I wouldn't say that. Lazy is not what I would call you.
All right, but you're not you. Yeah, but you can't call me what you think you could want to call me over the air. So, you know,
well,
forget
no,
that.
That's yeah, our ratings would put us on triple secret probation.
We get thrown off the good old Blog Talk for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Actually, no. Actually, if you mark your show as like adult, there's people who. You know, I guess I don't know if they're taking the easy route, but they cuss like crazy on these things.
Oh, true. Tis true. There are more than a few shows out there that drop the bombs like World War 90.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean,
wow.
If that's your audience, I guess that's fine, you know.
Either that or if you just want to hit home, shock your audience, get that point across and just say, listen, we're all adults here and we're going to speak like adults. And if you can't take it, go elsewhere.
Yeah.
There's that.
Yeah, but, you know, do all adults speak like that is what I wonder. I don't know.
Oh,
there are some
people who just get upset when you say, oh, darn, and they just start, they virtually get a case of the vapors.
No, Dave and I are not choir boys, but at the same time, we decided not to use adult topics as a crutch. It's a comic crutch. It's more challenging to not be vulgar.
It is. It's to me, it's just the easy way out, and it's not even usually funny. It's just the easy way out of something.
Yeah.
And to find a more descriptive way to say the same thing is so much funnier than to come out and just swear. It doesn't make sense to me.
Damn right.
But
that's why I appreciate the art of double entendre. That
It yes.
is an art form.
It is. Yes, it is.
It is, and some of the very folks we listen to on these shows were absolute masters at it. I mean, look at Groucho.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then he never look said, at Monty.
Yeah. Groucho never said anything that was dirty, but boy, did he crawl up to that line and push it a little sometimes.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Or my favorite was Monty Python. Monty Python, sex and violence on TV. I keep falling off the TV.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jesus. Well, maybe they were watching The Penguin. I don't know.
Yeah, but The Penguin is about to explode on BBC Four.
Yes. That is true. Who wants penguin guts all over them? Not me.
Not me. It's so funny sometimes to see what the English get squeamish over, but sex isn't one of them.
No. Or at least nudity. No. At least nudity.
Okay. Right. Nudity, they're not. Right. And yet, Starsky and Hutch was too violent of a show to air over there.
Yeah, I mean, whereas you had, and you had Benny Hill doing stuff that was, I mean, whoa.
Body. It was body.
Yeah.
How was that? Was that a nice way of saying it?
And he had the, I forget what he called those Benny Hill girls, but yeah. They interrupted the show with a song now and then, but yeah.
Oh, his limericks were hilarious.
And he had a Johnny Carson boyish face that helped them get away with a lot of things because they do that boyish face and that smile, and they could just get away with a ton of things, both of them.
Yeah. He almost had that, you know, I'm being naughty look of a little boy.
Yep.
And he was. Being naughty. Odd bird, though, and he died alone, from what I understand. He got kind of reclusive at the end.
Yeah, and I guess he was afraid of travel, at least of air travel and such. So everything he did basically right where he was at.
Yeah. Odd bird, but boy, what a wit and what a funny guy.
Yeah.
Yep. It wasn't a bad actor either. He was in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. He was the one that helped all the underground kids.
Yeah, he was the toy inventor, I think.
Yes, the toy inventor. You're right. Yes, that's who he was.
Benny Hill was, really?
Yes,
in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah, the only movie I remember him seeing was he was in the original the Italian Job with Michael Caine and Noel Coward. Yes.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
I have to go and check that out. Now, that is a nice piece of... See, again, you bring some stuff that... This Americana culture stuff that we don't know all the time.
Yes, I know many things because I was... Online when I should have been. Yeah, that's why. Excuse me. How dare you, sir?
Well, I didn't know. I was quoting the mysterious traveler. The Whistler.
Good old. Yeah, the Whistler. And I always think of that Spike Jonze skit. Where he comes out doing kind of whistling as Sir Frederick Gass. And he says, I am the Whistler, and I walk by night. I have to. How can I sleep with all that whistling going on?
And Jack Benny's spoof was great, too. I am the Fiddler.
Yes. Yeah, we did that, too. We aired that, too. Yes.
Yep.
Well, with that said, I must be away, but I'll be getting my voice in dulcet tones for the 11th of that date.
Yep.
Wait, well, the 11th, that's 3 weeks. That's 3 weeks, the 11th.
Is that 3 weeks?
Yes. Today is only the 24th.
24th, 28th. Oh, you're
and
right.
The fourth,
you're right, 'cause the first...
and then the 11th. Yeah.
Yes, 4-11. So you have an extra week to get ready, CW.
Oh, excellent.
So with that, there's only one thing left to do, and that's your job today, CW.
Oh, my task at hand is, there he is, in the distance. Oh, Mr. Durante, the ivory keys await you, sir, if you please.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more is this say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Toodaloo.
Arrivo, up we the thing.
Everybody's
coming.
It's good, dinkadoo.
Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Oh,